Well, you know, Aretha Franklin definitely gets respect for Warrior Connection and all the veterans and everybody in our nation, so that's why we use it. But one thing we continue to learn and continue to see and continue to observe is too often the VA and other ones don't have the respect for our veterans, and they don't get the care that they need. They don't get the treatment they need, and that just seems to be an ongoing, continuing problem. Denise, Paul, are you there with us tonight?
We are here.
Fantastic. Yeah, Denise, you were saying earlier when we talked to Paul, as we started to plan this, that we need to go back and talk about treatment, right?
Well, yes. I think, first of all, we need to cover the New York Times article that our other guest, Paul Lyons, has been tracking for some time, that there has been continued exposures in Iraq during Operation Iraqi Freedom. So we need to talk about that report on New York Times, and we need to say that it is time to halt all the deception, all the lying, and start talking about this is real. There was exposures during Desert Storm and has continued on during the time of Iraqi Freedom.
Yeah, one of the problems I ran into with the VA appointment myself on Wednesday is that the doctor immediately started to deny any, said it's all a controversy of the exposures, and my medical appointment from there just went downhill, and then afterwards I found out it happened to the same people. So, I mean, you're right on the money. I haven't read the article. Denise, Paul, talk about the article, please.
The article just came out in New York Times the other day, tracking the exposures from unexploded ordnance and the use of them and IEDs, which are the explosive devices that a lot of our troops were injured by, driving over, having it explode, and that a lot of these were chemical munition-type shells that they were using with the IEDs, much less finding the caches of it. And it's fully explained in New York Times of what has happened, the exposures that occurred to troops that showed physical symptoms were told to not talk about it. The medical directives apparently were not followed and were ignored. Basically, those that got burned with mustard agent, with handling these shells to try to get them to destroy, to get them so they could destroy them, there was mustard burns, there was sarin, there was the telltale signs of pinpoint pupils. They had problems with respiratory problems, the dizziness, the imbalance that you experience, the memory problems, the functional problems that occurred immediately. This was immediate symptoms that they have reported. And these people went to medical facilities in theater, were met with indifference. Even in theater, the awarding of the Purple Hearts was talked about. That they started to award some, then they pulled them back. This is part of the continuing story of chemical weapons that were in theater that Paul Lyons has tracked a lot of. He's been talking about this for years, that he had data on this. It finally hit the New York Times. Now we're going to have to battle for media attention to put the pressure on, because we also have Ebola. We also have ISIS. We have a stock market that's falling today. So, again, we get hit with a time period that the media is so preoccupied by other items that they're not speaking up for the veterans. Our veterans from the Gulf War have been going in for years, decades now, seeking care at the VA. We have had to fight to get bills through, to get presumptives through. They're not being adjudicated correctly. They are still going into the hospital and being met with doctors with no education, no training, no update. They've never seen Senator Riegel's report, much less any of the research that we have triggered by having the Research Advisory Committee and then having CDMRP funding every year trying to get answers. This is why our research is so critical. We need the biomarkers. We need treatment after the fact. When you don't get treatment effectively at the start and carried forward and monitored, it just compounds the situation. Paul, you want to talk about the New York Times article and kind of review
well,
that?
Well, what I've caught off Fox News. I really
Paul, you got to speak up
to
good and loud.
The article, but the new Fox News did give a brief synopsis of what the New York Times article stated, which was basically the highlights of around, I think they said 17, but they're still, of course, there's as they put it, they're still studying the matter. So I'm sure that there'll be more troops because I've got files showing that back at OIF they were mixing chemical warheads, chemical rounds, 155 rounds. That'd be your artillery rounds. They were mixing them with conventional rounds and making it harder to confuse the. It was harder for them to detect because they would put them on a daisy chain, and in the daisy chain, one of the when they would wire the rounds together, they would mix like one or two out of about six rounds with chemical, and that's how our troops were getting exposed on these improvised explosive devices, the IEDs. This has been going on since OIF, and I just got a webpage started known as the Persian Gulf War Veterans of America .org. However, it's not online yet because it's still being tweaked before I publish it. And we just got incorporated, or we're getting incorporated under the same name as such as a nonprofit. So we'll be putting information online pertaining to not just Desert Storm veterans, but also Operation Iraqi Freedom veterans and exposures pertaining to their health. Right. Also, when they came back, I found it interesting that the post-deployment health protocols that was to be followed by the Veterans Administration was lumped in with the same protocols for Desert Storm veterans, and I found that rather interesting as well. So this has been going on for quite some time, and a lot of people just didn't want to mention it. And they also have problems with some who have apparently died over there from these exposures because I've got studies on how they were trying to determine how they were going to send contaminated remains back to the United States to meet the health standards to get them over, get them back to CONUS, that's the continental United States, how they would get them back here without further contaminating other people. They were having problems with that, and there are studies that will be published online about that as well.
This occurred, and I'm referring back to the New York Times, in case you haven't read it.
I haven't had a chance.
Came out October the 14th, I believe the date on this is. But they're talking about from 2004 to 2011 that American and American-trained Iraqi troops were repeatedly encountered these shells. And on at least six occasions were wounded by chemical weapons remaining from years earlier in Saddam Hussein's rule.
That's what we need. One thing about that, Denise, and I was talking to Doug about it. Binary rounds, they're mixed. The contents in each round is mixed separately. Therefore, they keep for years. So when you start hearing through the press and other entities that these rounds are old and they're degraded, that's not the case.
Yeah, the on the binary rounds, there's no degradation that happens at all because the chemical compounds are kept separate. So until we get an explosion and a mixture of the whole thing, the stuffs are just nasty as can be.
Yeah,
so, I mean, we know from a fact from before, going back to our earliest reports, we got sarin, we got cyclosarin, we know we got Tabun, we know we got Soman, we know we have VX, we know we have multiple 7 and Novichoks. And then, Paul, I mean, you're the one that brought everything out about the dusty agents. And then we got all the biologicals, and that biological list is staggering.
Yes.
When you look at the stuff that Jim Toot got out in the Regal Commission report, I mean, there's no doubt at all about it.
Yeah, people keep laughing at me bringing up the Regal report if they have not read it. It's online, several places. All you have to do is Google Regal report. I have been encouraging people, if you've never read it, they should go back and read it in full. They're reporting in this article approximately, roughly, total of 5,000 chemical warheads. Now, they start out the article with an area near Tajif, Iraq, a whole stack of old Iraqi artillery shells buried beside a murky lake. They were in there trying to get them out, to dispose of them. It was in kind of lake water seeping in. One of them lifted a shell. The oily paste oozed from a crack, and it was mustard. Okay? They tested it with chemical detection paper. It turned red, indicating sulfur mustard.
Well, the mustard shells were all there. They were on all over the place because, I mean, I distinctly remember they had testimony on the Hill, and the mustard was confirmed at that time by the guys that used it, and they were definitely treated because I know there was a Purple Heart that was awarded to a guy for sure with the mustard. I don't know. That probably maybe was rescinded or everything.
That was Fisher.
That was Fisher,
because
yes.
They had to come out with all the lies once everything started showing up.
And
I know the 108th, and these were the guys who were going around and blowing everything up. I mean, they buried a whole bunch of stuff up in the middle of nowhere in the desert. You know, I remember that because at one time they said, where is this all buried? And they wanted us to tell them. And, you know, we weren't going to tell them where we buried all of this stuff.
Right. The New York Times reported 17 American service members and 7 Iraqi police officials who were exposed to nerve or mustard agent. Now, this is just the ones they've found, so we can anticipate it's probably greater because in this article they talk about one of them bringing a chemical shell back. Several instances were reported in this article of where they put it in a truck to bring it back to the forward operating base. I mean, my God.
That's why
know,
one of the files I have where it states when chemical rounds, and this is from OIF, it states when chemical rounds are found, don't bring them back to the base.
And yet they were doing it. They talked about at least 2 in this article that they put it in their truck and hauling it back, and therefore they were breathing the fumes, and it was affecting their driving. They were getting sick driving. Mm-hmm. Much less having handled it and getting burns that developed the classic blisters. I mean, they've got pictures in this. This one time, he said, an Army major who's speaking out now, the largest discovery was 2,400 nerve agent rockets unearthed in 2006 at a former Republican Guard compound. Okay.
Now, look, you got to also look at what's going on presently. This was yesterday in Fox News where ISIS has got a hold of some chemical rounds, and they're using them now.
Right.
You got to remember, ISIS is using the equipment that we gave to the Iraqis that we recovered as part of the Capture Equipment Project, and then just the redistribution. So I think one of the funniest things on this stuff, ISIS have some group, and these are just the Iraqis that were there before. So in all likelihood, which make an intelligent sense now, and Denise, you and I, but Paul, we've been figuring this out a long time ago, maybe these guys that are now ISIS, Iraqis, knew where the stuff was and just went and got it.
Well, yeah. They've got maps included with the article, very good maps pointing out where they were found and what areas ISIS controls. So they're mapping that out. And there's a failure here. A huge failure, just like in Gulf War, of covering this up, told not to talk about it, that was classified.
And did you say they were going to award them Purple Hearts at first?
Yeah, they started to. They made one award, and then they were going to award others. And this was by the Army Secretary, I believe, that's written up in this article. Then all of a sudden, they decided not to award them. And the one that had gotten it was told he couldn't wear it, wasn't official, it was classified and all that.
Oh, my God. See, this goes right back to everyone who was injured by as an instrumentality of war. And anyone who got exposed over there is actually, according to the regulations, entitled to a Purple Heart who was exposed.
They talk about the rationale and the Purple Heart of it has to be by enemy action. Well, who put the shells there in the first place? Who was using them in IEDs? I mean, whether you found a stash of them or whichever, that is the enemy. And to be splitting hairs with Purple Heart awards is just, it's a continuation of a
cover-up. This is a great big cover-up, and it's always been a cover-up.
You know, the thing that bothers me the most, and I'm looking back at the documents, and this goes down to Vieques, Puerto Rico. We know the incredible complex toxicity of conventional munitions and explosives, okay? And then when you mix these conventional explosives, all different types, and some are really nasty stuff, with the chemical and biological agents, you just got to, and the radiological materials, you just turn into a toxic, toxic wasteland. I mean, just completely beyond comprehension. And I remember when we were looking at trying to clean up Vieques, the manual that we were using is called Approaches for the Remediation of Federal Facility Sites Contaminated with Explosives and Other Radioactive Waste. And that was an EPA 625R93013, September of 93. So we've got all this stuff mixed together, and now, Jesus, I mean, there's no way to look at the end of this. No wonder we're seeing all these complex medical problems amongst everybody, whether they're Desert Storm or OIF, OEF, Operation New Dawn, and the civilians. I mean, it's just all of a sudden making total sense.
They're stating many of the chemical weapons clustered around the ruins of the Matana state establishment, and that is since June, under the control of the Islamic State.
Now, the question is, how much stuff, remember all that stuff was, a lot of stuff was buried, some was destroyed, at Camp Doha, you know, when they collected all the chemical munitions after the war, you know, up there in Kuwait, and you know, we had that massive, you know, massive fire and explosions. You know, I mean, we lost members of my team, you know, Desert Storm team. I mean, you know, Colonel Bill Arell and his guys got dead.
Apparently, you know, a lot of these were hidden underground, like they described at the lake. You know, they were kind of covered up. You know, they found them in different places, and apparently they had tried to hide them, and yet they were finding them. And what was happening was when these members of the military came upon it, they were supposed to, you know, call for backup with a special team. Well, some of them are reported here in the story that they called the special team, and they waited hours and hours and hours. And while they were waiting, they tried to wrap these things in plastic. And eventually, sometimes, most of the times, it sounds like from this article, the special team didn't show up. So they would go out and detonate and explode them.
And as we know,
open air, just like we had from the air bombing during the Desert Storm period.
Remember, Denise, you and I, we met with General Horner, and that was, I don't know, it was 10 years after the war. And he agreed, as they put in Schwarzkopf's autobiography on page 390 of It Doesn't Take a Hero, that just by detonating this stuff, all you did is spread it all over creation because it doesn't consume it. I mean, you have to have containment at high temperature, you know, to consume these munitions, and that's not going to happen. Remember when Chuck was so mad and all of us were so sick, and he's agreeing everybody is sick because they blew everything up and it didn't do anything but spread it?
Right.
I mean, so the same story is coming around again, and then you mix all these chemical and biological munitions with all the explosives, then you mix this with all of the inorganic or organic compounds and hazardous waste from the destruction of the infrastructure. Well, no wonder we got a million-plus casualties coming from OIF, OEF, and we got, you know, 400-and-some-odd thousand casualties from Desert Storm. I mean, this is inexcusable.
They're talking about in this article about when Hussein was dissolving the weapons that started back in 1981 during the Iran-Iraq war. He created a secret program known as Project 922, producing blister nerve agents by the hundreds of tons. All this was known in the 1990s, but yet the Gulf War veterans have suffered now for 24 years. And not been paid attention to. Now we find out our Operation Iraqi Freedom Troops were exposed. And to just, it's just the denial and the truth finally breaking out. The truth is coming out at a time that America is busy with a fear of Ebola, fear of the stock market crumbling. I mean, here we are again. Every time in the past that we tried to get the news out about the Gulf War veterans and Gulf War illness, there'd be OJ's, you know, incident. We had Monica Lewinsky. We had the fires in California. We never could get the attention and hold it out there forever until things were done right. And to know that this was happening in OIF, they were told not to talk about it. They didn't have the medics informed. They didn't have the doctors informed. They were treated like you're lying. You're on drugs or something. This is talked about in the article throughout, and it's quite a long and extensive article with a lot of links in it. And it's something that, bless your heart, Paul Lyons, you've been tracking this, and we've been talking about it over the phone of the documents you were finding. The Iraqi produced 10 metric tons of mustard blistered agent in 81. By 87, its production had grown 90-fold, okay?
Yeah.
Aided by two American companies with hundreds of tons of thiodiglycerol, a mustard agent precursor, the production took off. I mean, this is all outlined of the time periods and what's happened in our latest, you know, Iraqi freedom veterans.
You know, when we look at all this stuff, it's mind-boggling because, I mean, my doctor today, when I went in for the neurological, he flat out denied Gulf War illness and all the toxic exposures, and he said it was just a controversy. And then what bothered me even more, he brought up depleted uranium. He said, well, there's no measurement of exposures. Mm-hmm. Only the real bad time where they got the exposures were the guys that were immediately hit with it. And then I said, I'm the guy that did it, did the on-site investigations. And, I mean, it was just kind of like, well, I caught him here. Now what do we do? But the list of companies that were totally involved in all this stuff are the who's who of American and British and German industry.
I mean, it's just that finally, maybe we can get all this out, but it's at a time that the American media is sidetracked again, and veterans are still going into the VA asking for help, being told, we don't know anything about Gulf War illness. It's psychosomatic. I mean, that is still coming out. Every day in America, I hear from our veterans trying to go in and get treatment. We've had the RAC that just, you know, September 31st, six of our RAC members are now gone to be replaced here soon. Possibly we'll know by Christmas, I guess. But a RAC team that believed in us, they believed they knew and have been speaking up and battling against the VA all these years to do the right research. Do not focus on stress and psychosomatic, that this is real stuff. With Dr. Klimas and the team down in Florida, two teams down there working diligently with animal research to find the biomarkers so they can target drug treatment more effectively, to know that we have hundreds of thousands of Gulf War vets, and now we have the OIF. The proof is in the pudding. It's there. We need to wake up the VA and say, quit denying. Do not treat these people as psychosomatic or psychological stress. This is true damage. It's been continuing. We have new groups of veterans coming in and being treated the same way.
Well, Denise, the military has a repository where they keep every soldier's blood serum, and I don't recall the official name of the laboratory, but they can take our blood samples that they already have, and they can test them. They can check them. Let's see what it says here. Remember that memorandum I sent you where they can check for antibody titers?
Right.
They can check them for the following agents, and I mean, the list that I gave you showed, you know, anything from anthrax to going on to anything from West Nile virus to any of these agents, botulism. They can check it for sandfly fever. They can check it for sulfur mustard and organophosphorus agents. And this, once I get the paperwork located, it is a serum repository that the Department of Defense maintains, and they have everyone's blood samples. So I know they have either tested them already, or they very well could if we could get them prodded through Congress to do such things.
You know, one of the other things too is back, and this goes, Denise, you were totally involved in it, and I was involved. we had 1990 we had the 1999 we had Center for Disease Conference on research planning for Gulf War illness. And in here, obviously, they had the research recommendations, which, Denise, you keep talking about forever and ever and ever. You got the human studies, animal studies, new methodology, special needs, research oversight. We came down in the assessment and diagnosis. Again, you said over and over again, we got case definition. Chronic multi-system disorders, again, the IOM has totally confirmed that. We have the well-defined disorders. We got the overlap of conditions. Professor Klimas, Dr. Klimas is trying to do, you said, the biomarkers, right?
Yes.
And get those in place in the assessment and diagnosis so we get the proper stuff. And then we get into the treatment. I mean, the problem I keep running into and seeing, and I keep getting complaints on all over, is unless they have a lab test confirming something, they don't want to treat them, and they only want to treat them with certain things, looking at the holistic approach and the interrelationships of what's happening so that, and Denise, you're the RN and everything, can't one treatment modality interfere with another treatment modality for a different exposure?
Sure, always. Dr. Klimas is one person that has a game plan for treatment. You know, she's mainly running the research down in Florida with Fiona, with the animal lab. One of the things I've pointed out is Jim Benz's testimony to Shea's committee way back when, and I've got this on our Gulf War Illnesses page on Facebook, that's Gulf War Illnesses page, about the testimony. Mr. Benz has been right on in every one of his testimonies. He pointed out early on the difference between the Agent Orange legislation and the Gulf War legislation. The Gulf War legislation left out the animal studies that would confirm and support us. The legislation left out animal studies. Very significant deficiency there that was cut out. Now, we've had a lot of animal studies done. We still have animal studies going on that have shown every time there's been an animal study, it's shown proof. Okay? So that is actively still going on. We need to go back and get a correction in our legislation that it covers animal studies. We've made headway with the IOM. We had Dr. Hauser from University of California, San Francisco, neurologist, headed up one of the most excellent studies with the IOM that pointed out that we could find treatment. Like I said, Dr. Klimas is ahead of the game down in Florida. She has, you know, the proposal. We have her link to what she presented with her PowerPoint on Gulf War illnesses. Now, the VA headquarters has known about this. This is a lady that also worked at the VA Miami. The VA headquarters has chosen not to disseminate the PowerPoint to all their physicians throughout the VA. The VA headquarters has not been out and out honest with us and helping us. It's been a drag. I will not say what level, but I think it starts around operation, you know, the Office of Research and Development for years, until around 07, we were dealing with the VA funding stress research instead of the hardcore research that we finally are getting out of the CDMRP. People have yelled about the research because they're hurting. We have early deaths in early age groups. And, you know, hey, the cytokines that they're looking at right now are going to be the breaking point that will be able to be more effective in drug treatment. And all that has developed in a very short time. We started getting funding in 05. I was on the first review panel, I believe, 06. Then you have the time period where they have to do the contracting and decisions and getting things set up. So I say until around 07 at the earliest, probably 08, we didn't have our research going full steam through the CDMRP. So we're now at 2014, okay, 7 or 8 years. And most research proposals, when they're approved, like I said, may take a year to get it all set up, or maybe a little longer than a year. And then most of them, unless they're animal studies, they're usually 2-3 years, okay? So I think we've done a lot in that time period from 08 to 2014, but we've had severe restriction on funding. When we first started, $5 million for the first round. We've now worked up to $20 million this year and the past couple of years. That doesn't go very far. Okay?
You know, one of the things on the research funds and how coming from university life, when you talk about $20 million, that doesn't mean, you know, unless we can get something changed, that doesn't mean the $20 million goes into the actual effective research need to do the stuff, because you've got all of the other overhead costs and everything. Because I know at the University of Illinois, they were looking at a 62% overhead.
Right.
So 62 cents out of every dollar was scummed off for nonsense instead of direct research on care and treatment and everything else. And we need to get that fixed, too.
Well, I brought that up in the first panel I sat on because I looked at budgets and I said, hey, you know, the DOD needs to get involved here to negotiate a special rate. And for this situation, I don't think we should have a 60% markup. Okay? It is okay to pay the researcher their assistance, you know, cover their insurance for that time, the equipment they're using. They also need to look at that and, you know, can it be passed on to another researcher to use? You know, how are we reusing some of the hardcore funding for equipment? We've been very limited. We have problems and have had problems with travel for the veteran being included in those budgets to get them to these research places. They've been focused at the following places. In Palo Alto, they've done research with the VA there with the war-related illness. San Diego, they've had research some on the GI problems out of New Mexico and Salt Lake City. They've had research on the blood coagulation problem at Minneapolis VA. The MAG study was Minneapolis VA. You have Georgetown that has done the MRI with the DT technology, plus the spinal proteomics. You have Boston. You have Miami, Florida. We have the detox Hubbard treatment up in, it's actually right close to D.C., but over in Maryland. But they are not covering the expense to get the people there and to provide them housing. You know, when they're there for the six-week program, I think, for the detoxification in Annapolis area. These are problems, and that's why it takes time to get our research subjects in, if you cannot fund them, to get them there, cover that cost for them, when some of them aren't even getting their VA compensation. The world needs to know what we're dealing with. We're having to do smaller-scale studies and multiple areas to get as much info as quickly as we can in multiple areas before you ever try to do a large scale like they did with the microplasma with the doxycycline study that put, you know, a bad taste in everybody's brain at the cost that that was, you know, figured out to be in the end. You know, we need to have more centers involved. We need to have medical universities, all of them. There's like 160 medical universities of different levels, but they're medical universities, 160, 170, I think, in this country alone. And they're scattered throughout the country. There's been no coordination to, you know, do a lot of things in a quick time period. The CDMRP with the DOD has done the best job that I've seen.
Now, another problem I ran into, and this goes back to the same thing, we got the incredible work of Dr. Bob Haley at Texas Southwest.
Right.
And looking at all that stuff and looking at the damages. When I presented those the test results to the doctor today, the doctor said, well, this is all controversial and it doesn't mean anything, and there's no research basis for this or anything. And I'm sitting there looking at, here's the actual printout, here's the chart, here's the graphs, here's the explanation, here is the brain scan. And the guy just discounted it. No wonder we have a problem because, I mean, I'm looking here at the mission statement for the VA. This is their core values or whatever it's supposed to be. Fulfill President Lincoln's promise to care for him who shall have borne the battle for his widow and his orphan by serving and honoring the men and women who are in America's veterans. That's caring for everybody in the family, not just the veteran, but the sick, the family members that we know that has been affected. Core values are compassion, commitment. Well, when you can't get a commitment from a doctor that doesn't want to give proper care based on quality of life, where are you going to go? Excellence. I mean, it's a joke. Professionalism. I mean, how long have we talked about this? Continuing medical education, working beyond this, not, you know, going to work and taking a, you know, 2 hours for a coffee break out of a six-hour day. Integrity, telling the truth.
And it's not funding things like mindfulness or, you know, acupuncture when we need the hardcore data from cytokines and how to treat that and how to focus our treatment and our drugs, okay? And some of the drugs they give actually hurt the veterans more than help. Just like Dr. Klima said, that a lot of the narcotics that are used for pain are definitely not what the Gulf War veterans need. And so, you know, we have a problem that starts on the battlefield.
You know, we've all seen this, when you start mixing the psychotropic drugs with the pain drugs with the other drugs, you got a toxic soup that can't, you know, I mean, you don't need it. And the question is, why can't we come up with proper treatment that can reduce the need for the pain meds? And why can't we tell the truth, which reduces the need for the psychotropic drugs to dumb the person down and numb them down?
And why, when the headquarters knows of Climus's work and she has a protocol for treatment, why have they sat on it? Why have they not distributed that? Why haven't we had policy statements that are real for the Gulf War Vets Forward, okay? This is real. You're not going to discount them. You're not going to call them fakers, psychosomatic, somatic. This is real. We need to look at it. We need to push the research as fast as possible with the cytokines and the treatment, very targeted with biomarkers.
And you know,
like
the
I
whole
said,
thing comes
within,
down to it.
Within 7 or 8 years, we have pushed and gotten to the cytokine research that was so needed years ago that we could focus drug treatment effectively.
So yet, when this is all coming down, then they try to disband the research advisory board and the work, incredible work of Jim Binns, just at the time when it's becoming all this more crucial and critical that information gets out. I mean, it's broken.
Well, we've known that for a while, but we cannot stop our efforts to bring alertness and awareness to our veterans, their families, the civilian population. I mean, this is just unbelievable as I watch Ebola. And we've had four or five treated in the U.S., and we've got two nurses now. Versus,
you know, when we look at,
versus hundreds of thousands of Gulf War vets and the current OIF vets that have returned home that had exposures, you know, whether it's 17 direct exposures, much less indirect exposures, you know, we have a problem, America.
You know, they sent the 101st Airborne, elements of 101st Airborne over to Africa, supposedly on the Ebola mission. Well, these guys are not prepared or trained to do that stuff. Look what happened during Desert Storm. And Denise, Paul, you and I have been working on this for too many years. No, the active military was definitely not prepared for the chembiol and the hazard materials. They weren't prepared during Desert Storm. They're definitely weren't prepared for OEF. They're definitely not prepared for industrial and commercial incidents and agricultural and educational incidents. And it's like nobody's home because nobody wants to address the total failures of a system that was unprepared and nobody wants to take responsibility. I mean, I want to cry. I want to scream.
Doesn't make any sense. I don't know what it's about.
What, Paul?
It doesn't make any sense, Doug, all of this. I don't know what it's about. If it's money, they should have told us that before they deployed us because, you know, every soldier should know that the Department of Defense and every branch has their back if they get injured in wartime. And they shouldn't have to fight for their benefits. And they shouldn't have to be contacting congressmen and senators and writing up reports saying, hey, I'm not getting treated because the VA's not doing this or that. And they need to get on the job and do what they were sworn to do. And that's part of their protocol, and that's just the way things should be. That's part of their charter.
One of the lines here in this article really blows me away, okay? And, you know, we're talking about OIF. The discovery of these chemical weapons did not support the government's invasion rationale.
Really?
I haven't read
the article yet. That's why I wish I could comment more on it. But
the discoveries of these chemical weapons did not support the government's invasion rationale.
Really? So in their war plan, their op plan, they didn't consider any chemical or biological weapons over there.
And I thought that was why the OIF was launched, was the potential there.
Well, yeah, that, exactly. President Bush was stating they still had them.
Am I remembering wrong that that was the reason we went to Iraq instead of...
And then it seemed like the government was going out of their way to say they didn't have them.
You know, it's mind-boggling on the whole mess because, I mean, I have come back and all the years we've dedicated, and everybody is dedicated, and yet nobody can get proper and optimal medical care and prompt medical care when they need it because they're just in continual denial of anything that happens. And yet when the internal reports confirm all of it, somehow nobody reads it or not put out. It's like censorship 101. How do you prevent accountability? Well, you censor the message.
Yeah.
There you go.
Let me go on with the second paragraph after that one sentence, standalone paragraph. After the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, Mr. Bush insisted that Mr. Hussein was hiding an active weapons of mass destruction program in defiance of international will and at the world's risk. UN inspectors said they couldn't find evidence for these claims. Okay, by that time, they had stopped their active program, but that doesn't mean, and has proven here, that they didn't hide all the shells under earth. You know, they weren't lying around in warehouses where the UN could find them. They were underground, and not that far underground.
Well, you know what? Our military found a jet buried under the sand. If they can find a jet, they always tell them that anything can be buried under the sand.
And they talked about the sarin being in the range of 42% to 95% pure.
Because they were probably, most likely, 99%, they were binary rounds, just like Doug and I said. They're mixed in separate containers, and they're not made to degrade. They're made to, once they explode, they mix, the contents mix together, and there you have your agent.
So, you know, I'm wanted to focus this program on the Gulf War and on the exposures, and it's very timely with having the New York Times finally get this out. And, you know, I haven't seen it in other papers. This should be duplicated and carried in other papers, and at least some mention on CNN, some mention on MSN. You said you heard a little
Fox
bit of
News
it.
Fox News has it. I recorded it.
So, you know, this is affecting thousands, hundreds of thousands of our veterans.
It will be before it's over. It's already affected hundreds of thousands of veterans from Desert Storm, but from Operation Iraqi Freedom, you're correct. It's interesting. And when they start saying, well, we're going to do an investigation or we're going to do a study, that's a byline for saying, hey, the press can't ask any more questions because we're doing a study or we're doing an investigation, and we can't disclose anything during the period of the either study or the investigation. That just slaps a lid on everything.
And they talk about, here's another couple of paragraphs. Participants in the chemical weapons discovery said the U.S. suppressed knowledge of finds for multiple reasons, including that the government bristled at further acknowledgement it had been wrong. They needed something to say that after September 11th, Saddam used chemical rounds. And all this was from the pre-1991 era.
You know, the persistency of all these agents and the contamination, we know And again, the internal Army reports and documents confirm that a persistency, say, for example, at Skull Valley out in Utah, you know, where they used all the nerve agents on the sheep, and the sheep are still contaminated, and the land is contaminated. But when we blew all this stuff up and all the mines got blown up and spread everything all out, so it stays there and it's buried in the dirt until it's unearthed again, or then they find another landmine. I mean, the number of landmines, of biological and chemical landmines, that were buried all over Iraq and Kuwait had to be staggering. And so God knows if they ever found them, and then maybe now they found some of those things or unearthed them, or maybe the guys that buried them are now the ISIS guys that know where they buried them.
Yeah. Others pointed to another embarrassment. In five of the six instances in which troops were wounded by the chemical agents, the munitions appeared to have been designed in the U.S., manufactured in Europe, and filled in chemical agent production lines built in Iraq by Western companies. That's what we've all known.
Right.
For decades now. And to look at how these troops were treated with maybe Tylenol or oxygen, you know, they didn't talk about serum exposure and treating them with atropine and IVs at all.
Did you know that West Germany, you know, here they were during World War II and the Holocaust and everything, they were the manufacturers of most, if not all, of the chemical facilities for Iraq prior to the invasion of Desert Storm. I didn't know if you all knew that, but it was West Germany. A lot of their major firms were involved with contracts with Saddam Hussein at that time.
Right.
You know, all these companies that were involved, and this is going back a long time, back in December 17th.
A lot of American companies were involved as well. You start throwing money out, and you know, you can get anything.
And what's the shame of it is 1994, May 24th, if I remember the day correctly, with the Senator Riegel report, you know, and we had them running in the early 90s up till around 96, 97, and then it kind of faded from the viewpoint.
Well, it's back in the news again, and I want to see how they're going to react. If they would just come out to the American public, and especially to the veterans, they owe it to us before they owe it to anybody else, especially those who have sick family members like I do. They need to tell us what's going on and what they're doing. I have the information what they're doing. I want them to say it themselves. We shouldn't have to shame them into telling the truth. They need to tell the truth on their own.
I'm sitting looking at the Riegel Commission report right now, and the list of biological agents on this report is mind-boggling. And the medical problems for this, and the same thing with Ebola, I mean, what we know is we do not have the medical resources to handle these biological agents. And anybody thinks that they have the medical resources to handle a large-scale outbreak of Ebola in Texas or any place is just dreaming, because I mean, Denise, if you remember, Paul, or if you remember, we didn't have enough medics, enough supplies, so we had to do the Combat Lifesaver program just to teach the common soldier how to do IV therapy, because there were not enough medical professionals who could even come close to start all the IVs necessary for this stuff. I mean, what are they going to do in hardcore reality when all heck breaks loose? Where's the training? Where's the education? Where's the equipment? Where's the information? Where is the medical
protection over there, Doug? You know, you can't stay in mop gear very long, or you'll die from a heat. You'll die as a heat casualty, and that's why they didn't have us gear up like we should have. It was just a no-win situation over there in that climate. You know, when you had 20 degrees or 30 degrees body heat, it's 120 outside, and you get up to 140, 150 degrees inside. Once you're inside your mop four. Fully clothed and masked, you're not going to last very long.
Well, and I mean, you had to do a mop 4 is what they had available, but as you know, because of the dusty agents and the small stuff, you got to go to mop 5, but nobody has this stuff, and then when you go to you have to go to basically a level A, a level B, or a level A for civilians in the civilian world, you've got nothing.
Well, the only way
another quote here in the article. Their cases, said Colonel Jonathan Newmark, a retired Army neurologist, became the only documented battlefield exposure to nerve agent in the history of the United States. Well, excuse me, what happened during the air war, during the Gulf War? Gag orders were issued. Couldn't talk about it.
Well, maybe and that's what Schwarzkopf said when he found out about chemical exposure over there. He said he treated it cavalierly. Well, you look up cavalierly in the dictionary and you'll find out it pretty much means that somebody just doesn't give a, and I won't say the word, but they don't.
One medical record, pinpoint pupils, headache, dizziness, wheezing, audible, and they were given Tylenol and oxygen.
Well, that's like over in Desert Storm. They didn't even keep the medical records of us that we had.
No, they were all destroyed. That was confirmed by 3rd MedCom when they went to retrieve the records.
Yeah.
And the other thing, too,
no
we do know with those hearings that were happening, what was that, Denise, 1998, when the General Blanc made the order down to destroy all those medical records and the bio logs at Florida?
When we brought the major in to testify after the Fox vehicle gunny sergeant. That's when that occurred at Shay's hearing. These soldiers have had continual symptoms, intense headaches, difficulties with balance, memory. The typical things that we see with our Gulf War vets has continued on.
I don't know.
When does it end?
I don't know. Maybe.
When the civilians are affected, how many civilians have to be affected and get sick? How many sons and daughters of everybody has to be affected before people wake up and decide to help and decide to do something, hold these people accountable for what happened.
Right.
But more important, how do we get everybody to give the proper and optimal medical care when they don't even want to acknowledge that the health effects come from all these toxic exposures?
Well, you know what? Like I said in the beginning, Doug,
you got to speak up, Paul.
It came back down to money because of, just like the Arison report that he put out, you know, if it comes back down to money because they didn't know the government didn't want to compensate those who are sick and can't work and they're ill, you know, it wasn't money when we went over there. No one ever told me that we would be on a fixed budget, and I don't think anyone else told you guys, hey, we're on a fixed budget with the Department of Defense, and if you get hurt, they can only treat you for, you know, they can only spend X amount of dollars on you. That never came up. And I, like everyone else, believed, I guess foolishly at that time, that if I got sick, Uncle Sam would take care of us, and we had nothing to worry about. And we found out, unfortunately, otherwise, that apparently for political reasons, money was the actual issue.
Here we go again. In late 05 and 06, soldiers collected more than 440 122-millimeter chemical rockets near Amara in southeastern Iraq. In the first 9 months of 2006, the American military recovered roughly 700 chemical warheads and shells. British forces destroyed 21 rockets in early 2006. So, you know, this is a continuing saga. The neglect of the veterans continues. We're at 2:03 p.m. just to give y'all alert on the time. I think we're about to run over.
Okay.
But, you know, here we have, finally, in 2014, October, we're finally getting reports out on the chemical exposures for OIF, and they withdrew from Iraq, a year ago now? No, it's been longer than that.
It's been longer than that, yeah. I think it's been around,
I mean, we don't have a whole lot of...
Where
are the veterans organizations that should be helping? Where are the senior leadership, all these retired officers that should be helping, other than a handful of us that have been made the commitment to try and help everybody. I mean, we've got a lot of NCOs that have stepped up to the plate over all the years, but there hadn't been a lot of commanders other than, you know, Andres Carnegie Barth and Asa Durakovich, Tom Little. We had that one general. Do you remember his name, Denise, that worked for Bernie Sanders?
Yeah. In this article, there's quite a few colonels and doctors speaking up that were over there. So, I mean, this should re-energize us to push forward. We need to keep pushing to get our veterans the care and compensation that they earned. They are wounded soldiers.
Well, I need to put out that I just got a message from Kurt Love, and he's no longer doing websites. I need someone to help me with this website for the Persian Gulf War Veterans of America.org that I'm working on. So if someone can just do the front page and do a few back pages, I can load the documents and maintain the site. But anyone out there listening, if they'd be interested, they can contact me at dstorm_vet_101st@yahoo.com, and I hope I can find someone who wants to help us.
Well, we're running out of time again. Another good show, Gary. Thank you very much for allowing us to get all the information out. The Progressive Radio Network and Warrior Connection is first in line to inform the vets and ensure us taking care, and everybody's taken care of. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Denise. Thank you, Paul. And let's keep working on it, guys.
Got it.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.